Greetings. You're now listening to the most handsome and intellectually superior specimens on Earth. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. Starts now.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time of day it is where you are. We hope that you're doing well. We're pleased to be able to bring you another episode of I Could Be Wrong, But I Doubt It. My name is Fresh, and we're thankful that you decided to join us today. Before we get into this week's episode, I'd like to remind you that if you like what you hear, please go to Apple Podcasts and rate our podcast and leave us a comment or two. Now, without further delay, we're going to go ahead and get this thing rolling, man. Reg is not with us for this particular episode today. He had some things he had to take care of at the crib, man, so he'll be back next go around, man, but we're going to go ahead and keep it moving today. Today we have Chicago's own Christopher Lamarck, who has been a voice in his hometown of Chicago since 2000. Originally, he began his music journey as a CHH representative under the name Focus, which he would evolve into a playwright, a live concert producer, and a public speaker. His music features a dialogue that encourages men and women who deal with rejection, identity, and abandonment issues. His approach is unique, fresh, and relatable. From pain, transition, and triumph, he has a sound that resonates with the culture. Offstage, Lamarck was suffering silence from PTSD due to a traumatic childhood. After taking a break and seeking therapy, Lamarck launched his new initiative in coffee, hip-hop, and mental health. The goal of coffee, hip-hop, and mental health is to encourage the community to unpack and rebuild their minds through clinical therapy. And without further delay, ladies and gentlemen, Christopher Lamarck. Christopher Lamarck, how are you doing today, man?
Man, I'm doing well, Fresh. Thanks for having me.
Man, it is an absolute pleasure to have you on the show today. And, man, we're going to go ahead and jump right into the interview today, man. And I really have one burning question, man. I need you to describe in detail the movement that is coffee, hip hop, and mental health. And before you describe it, I want you to take each section. I want you to tell us why coffee, why hip hop,
right,
and how that goes into, you know, mental health should be self-explanatory, but what we have found, or what we have come to realize on this particular show, and like I said on a lot of our previous shows, you know, we always say that Black people as a whole, based on the trauma and the terror of white supremacy over, you know, hundreds of years and generations, that we as a group probably have more post-traumatic stress than any other people living in this country. So we're, you know, very big advocates of therapy. So, I mean, this is definitely going to be right in your wheelhouse. But if you will, once again, tell us about why coffee, why hip hop, and how that relates to the awareness of mental health that you're trying to raise.
Sure. It's a good question. And I recognize, Fresh, that it's an interesting title. So it was, I want to say, late October or early November of 2018. I'm sitting in the middle of a Starbucks in downtown Chicago, and I'm listening to Meek Mill's intro record. And it's crowded, right? It's crowded in this Starbucks. And I started to, like, cry just out of nowhere. And I didn't realize it at the time, but I was having a breakdown. I was going through so much emotional stuff. Life was changing. Things wasn't going my way. And I really didn't know what my next step was. But it was in that moment I said, you know, hip-hop and music and the ideal of performing, it carried me for a long time. You know, my faith in God and But really being able to get on stage and write music and just having a gift of music and, you know, and just being on that stage, it helped me hide some of my unresolved traumatic childhood experiences, right? And so in this moment, I'm having this breakdown. I was motivated to say, you know what? Look, I'm getting older. I want to leave a greater legacy, so it's time for me, like, to go to therapy. After all the years of fighting it, in that moment, I made a decision, like, to go to another level. And so I said, you know what? It's time to unpack. It's time to face, like, these demons, all this mess. And once I started going to couples therapy first, that led me to transition to my own individual counseling. And I started to feel liberated. It was hard. It was tough to be that vulnerable, to open up. But after going, I said, you know what? I think it's cool if I take this whole concept, this breakdown that I had, and turn it into a plus. And that's how Coffee, Hip Hop, and Mental Health was created. I wanted to be able to have an intimate conversation with my people, like you sit down and have coffee or tea with your friend.
Right, right.
And I wanted to be able to really dive and decode how hip hop played a very important role in our lives as a Black community, right?
Right.
And then also, I wanted to use all of that to lead into this conversation surrounding the stigma of like Black people and mental health. And that's how it was birthed, and that's the path that we're on.
Okay, so let me ask you this real quick, man, as a follow up to that, because you mentioned that you had been fighting the necessity, you know, it you know, from what you're saying, it's like you knew that something had to be done, and it seems like that therapy was probably on your mind, but you had some reservations about it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I definitely had some reservations because I remember when I was 15 or 16 years old, and I would never forget this day, Fresh. So I was living in a group home in the South Suburban area of Chicago. And one of my caseworkers took me to what was a weekly therapy session that would have started for me. And I remember sitting down with the lady, and I refused to play with these blocks. Like, she wanted me to play with these blocks, and I felt this was very kiddy, very childish. So I refused to do it. And so she said, well, you're not going to leave until you work with me. And she said, if you don't want to play with the blocks, I want you to draw this house. Just draw a house for me. And so, okay, great. That was easy. So I started drawing this house. And after I was done, she took the piece of paper. No, actually, she stopped me because I was circling a doorknob, and I wouldn't stop circling the doorknob. Like, it was bold, like I just kept circling the doorknob. And she said, stop. Why are you focusing on doorknobs so much? And she said, that represents you trying to get out. And Fresh, when I tell you, from there, she told me my whole childhood story. She was able to read everything I had went through, everything I refused to tell anybody. And that frightened me. And ever since that day, being a 15 or 16 year old young boy, I didn't even want to like go and sit and have that exposed to me anymore. And so I ran from that. And so the thought of therapy frightened me because I wasn't ready to be that vulnerable. And you have to be vulnerable when you think about going to therapy.
Right, right. Yeah, that is something that you have to be able to bear. The innermost parts of your soul, if you will. Otherwise, it really doesn't do any good for you if you don't.
Not at all.
You know, if you go in there and you try to hold back, which is because you know I've been to therapy as well, man. I've had to, and it's not something that I've freely talk about on the podcast a lot because. It's I don't know if people are really that interested or not, but since this is the topic of the day, when my mother died back in 2012, I never unpacked that grief. I didn't have the opportunity to actually, or I didn't take the opportunity to actually properly grieve. And it built up and it built up and it built up and it built up until it just exploded. Yeah. I had to get somebody to help me, you know, put those pieces of my mind and my heart back together. So
I get it. So I get it, brother.
So you know, it's a difficult thing to, and you're probably going to agree with me on this. It's a difficult thing to have that whole notion of your being dismantled, and then having to put it back together piece by piece in more of a healthy way, because we get so used to the dysfunction. And because we learn to survive within the dysfunction, we learn to, in some cases, in some cases, even thrive in the dysfunction. So we think
that's so true.
So we think that it's okay. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
We think that's
so
okay.
True.
But at the end of the day, we're doing more damage to ourselves than what we realize. So,
such a disservice.
Yeah. So, and that's kind of been, you know, my personal experience of it. But yet and still, and I'm sure you come across a lot of people that still have this mentality or still have this attitude. We as Black men, because I can't speak, you know, to Black women. I can only speak for the, you know, brothers I know and for myself. We still have to be dragged into that office to be able to open up. It's like, you know, we're time bombs. We're like mental and emotional time bombs.
Yes.
That are ticking, but we won't seek the help. Why do you think that is?
I think it goes back, and I don't want to go this deep, but I feel like in order to answer your question, we have to go deep. So I was talking to my mentor, and we talked about post-traumatic slavery syndrome, right? And I believe, and we believe that Black people as a whole, we still haven't dealt with the trauma that was passed down because of slavery, right?
Right.
And so just imagine when you think about slavery in itself, they took us away from our heritage, our lineage. And ever since then, we've been trying to hold on to something, right? That's why there's a crabs in the barrel mentality in a Black community. Everybody out for themselves. We don't want to share knowledge. It's not that we don't really want to help, but we're so afraid of losing. And since resources and opportunities are so slim fresh in our community, we all just trying to hold on to the little that we have.
Right,
and so everybody afraid of giving away. Everybody afraid of sharing. And so I feel like it stems from what was originally taken from us, you know?
Right.
And it's so much that's a cause and effect because of how we were raised, right? And I feel that we passed down so much trauma and pain that stemmed from that, that it's tough for even us to be vulnerable and like open in that regard, because we don't want nobody to take anything from us anymore. And so we learn to just close ourselves up, and we have that just to get by mentality, right?
Exactly.
I'm going to push through. And like you said, we learn how to function in chaos because we had to. Our ancestors had to, right? We are probably one of the most loving, forgiving races, but yet we struggle with, you know, loving our own selves.
Exactly.
And so I feel like that's the biggest issue, you know, not wanting to open up, because you don't want nobody to take your strength, to like take something from you. So as men, we walk around just holding it because we can't afford to break.
Right. But like, let me tell you this, man. It's another kind of, personal view, if you will. I have become the type of person that I give first, because what I found out is that, man, giving actually feels pretty damn good.
Feels it does. Good. It really does.
I have given a lot of knowledge away. I've given a lot of quote unquote game, free game, if you will, about a lot of different topics, whether it be, you know, photography, you know, music production, podcasting, you know, even back when I used to DJ, man, you know, giving game away, you know, giving knowledge away and things like that, given opportunities. I am a very huge supporter of other Black businesses. I look for opportunities to buy things that I like that we produce or that we sell.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know that, because, you know, as soon as I saw that camo hat, I was like, yo, how can I get it? And, you know, and I bought it, you know, immediately. So it's one of those things where I found out that giving of myself and giving opportunities and money and support, because support is a verb. It's not, you have to do something.
Yes.
You have to do something in order to really, you know, support somebody. And it doesn't necessarily have to be monetary. You know, it costs you nothing to like or to share or to tell somebody else about it. So, you know, that's the type of person that I have, that I had to become in order to help me with these other breakthroughs and these other areas that, you know, that I was involved in, because, you know, admittedly, I was on that other side too. I was trying to protect what I thought were the better parts of me. But what I didn't realize is that the best part of me was the fact that that I had confidence and that I had skill and that I had knowledge and that I had things that I could actually share. And so, you know, when you discover, because my saying now is like everybody has a gift, but the greatest gift is actually finding out what that is and sharing it. And so, you know, that's what I wanted to do when I started the podcast and when I do some of these other things and even some of my other business ventures. You know, I always want to tell people how I'm doing it, you know, freely share information. Say, hey, this works for me. This might work for you. You know, I mean, you know, you and I have had those conversations too. It's like this works and this doesn't. I've had this experience or whatever. There's nothing wrong with that. But we need to get in the habit of doing that with each other and not looking, you know, at each other as competition, because it is competition.
Right.
But it's like,
right,
if you succeed, if I'm comfortable enough for you to, you know, for you to tell me, if I know in my heart that, hey, if he makes it, I know he's going to give me some tips. You know, I mean, we have to believe that.
Right.
We have to believe that within each other, and we don't. And that's why it's kind of like that's why we lose, man. That's why we lose. That's exactly why we lose. So, but anyway, man, I could talk about that all day. So I'm not gonna harp on that. But I did wanted to follow up with the question, and you can go as deep into this as you want to, or if you want to be a little bit more reserved with it, you can. But you know, in your bio, you know, we talked about how you suffered from PTSD due to a traumatic childhood. I mean, would you like to describe some of the events that caused your trauma?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you really could be helping somebody if you talked about those things, because, I mean, I'm sure that club is not exclusive. So, you know, let's talk about that if you want to.
Sure. So back in Chicago, the Inglewood area, my mom, God rest her soul, was a young mother. She had five children, four girls and one boy. I'm the middle child. And what I know now is that my mom, because she was a young mother, she would often leave us at the house by ourselves. And on one particular day in 1982, we was left by ourselves, and someone reported it, and we was taken from her custody. She lost custody, and then we were placed in various homes, and eventually we were placed with my mother's brother and his wife and family. And for about 12 years from... I endured, along with my sisters, various abuse, mental, emotional, physical. It was tough. The majority part of my living there, I was often isolated. My aunt would lock me and confine me in a dark, cold basement, which is where, you know, the washer and dryer was, but it wasn't really a finished basement. It was just a basement. And, you know, imagine it being dark and cold when you're a kid.
Right, right.
And the amazing part in that, God would allow me to be introduced to my imagination, because at first, you know, it was, you know, I used to just sit there for hours, you know, with my arms and knees, like within my shirt, so I can, you know, find some warmth. And then after a while, I would start playing like I'm Superman, Neil Anderson, number 35 of the Chicago Bears, or I was tapping into my, you know, I was tapping into like my imagination. But that was tough, because I didn't know then, but what it was doing psychologically, it was messing me up, because I was always confined in like dark spaces. And whether it be the basement, or she would lock me in an enclosed back porch that had a garbage can, so I would hear rats and roaches, and I'll be in there locked. I couldn't come in the house, and I couldn't leave the house. And, you know, I'll be playing with a basketball or something in the house, just being a kid, and she'd come out of nowhere, like with a broom, hit me over the head. She used to have this thing that she used to do. If I got in trouble at school, she would have me hold like two pennies, right, and stretch my arms wide, you know, like a cross.
Okay.
You know that famous poster of Michael Jordan where he got both his arms stretched out
with the basketball,
and he holding the basketball.
Right.
So imagine my arms like that, holding two pennies with one of my legs up, standing in that position. And if I drop my leg or drop a penny, my aunt would smack, kick, hit me with a belt, whatever. And I would have to stand in the middle of the floor, so it didn't matter if company was over, or it just didn't matter. She would have me stand in that position from like 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock to the time she went to bed. She would purposely stay up to 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning while standing in the middle of the floor like that. From 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon to about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, my aunt would do that. Mm-hmm. And so whether it was holding two pennies or I was holding like these encyclopedias. And that was some of the stuff that my aunt would do to me. And she abused all of us, but I just felt like I got it the worst. And for whatever reason, maybe because I was a boy, I don't know, but that really affected me because it'd be times I'll be asleep. And she would already punish me and whip me for something that I was doing. But when my uncle got home, she would tell my uncle, and I would be asleep. I mean, imagine as a kid, sleep. I mean, you're asleep, and you're being woken up with belt or stitching cord because your uncle is getting you while you sleep. That is the worst type of ass whooping, like, ever, because you're asleep. Right. You feel me? Like, you're asleep, fresh. And you're been, and I believe that because I never knew like what my aunt was going to do. I never knew what she was going to do. And I would always be fearful. You know, I would always have to watch over my shoulders because I never knew what my aunt was going to do unless she grabbed a bottle of like Canadian Mist or Crown Royal. Whenever she would drink, I was happy because she would become like the nicest person, the nicest person. So if anybody who's hearing like this podcast, if you can remember the movie Antoine Fisher, man, that woman that he stayed with, that foster mom, that is the closest version of who my aunt was. Wow. Now, my aunt has moved on. And I really mean, God rest her soul, I mean that God allowed me to forgive her. Because I realized that people don't function like that without something happening to them.
Right.
You know, and that's why I believe that trauma is passed down throughout the generation.
Right.
Yeah, various ways. So yeah, as tough as it was to endure living with my aunt, I have a soft spot for her because I understand that something happened to her. It had to, because I wouldn't imagine doing that. You know, like to, you know, any of my children, right? But it wasn't just that, you know, leaving there and then going into like the Audi home, the boys and, you know, group home and, you know, being picked on and not having family. Look, fresh, not having a mom and a dad is traumatic. Not knowing who you come from, that's a traumatic thing in itself, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I experienced living in a childhood fire. If you look it up, 1994 in Chicago Heights, Illinois, November 15th, 1994, I was awakened to a fire, like literally fire blazing underneath my door.
Wow.
And the end result of that, Fresh, was two of the housemates died. One died right away because he was going inside of his closet to grab his inhaler, but the smoke got him and he just burned alive in that house. And that was Daniel. He died at 17. And then Jeremy, God rest his soul, would die 2 or 3 days later because he died of bad burns.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I remember like the next day, if you look this story up, the next day it called us delinquents. It said 8 delinquents were in a house fire.
Wow.
And I remember how that made me feel because we wasn't in this home because we were bad children. Jeremy, who died at 17, his mother gave him up because she couldn't afford to feed him.
Yeah.
And he would eventually die in a house fire. Can you imagine how painful that is?
Yeah.
And so just, man, like the fear from, you know, living in the house with my aunt, the dreams and the pain that come from that, and then the dreams and the pain that come from this fire, and being integrated from every level of the law, the FBI, right?
Thinking, you know,
like the local
it.
Police. Man, thinking that we started it.
Right.
I mean, it was heavy. That was painful. I was 15 years old. You know?
Yeah.
And look, man, I'm not saying that there is not one good thing that happened in my life. There are plenty of good memories, but I also understand that I was a dude as a child.
Right.
And I spent my whole life musically trying to feel better and to know that God had a plan for all of that. And I feel like God gave me the ability, like, to have a voice, like, to be brave enough to cast a light on it. Like, so that way I can help the people who are currently going through or who are not strong enough, like, to speak up about it. So
that's
where I came from, man. It's, you know, it's much more, but that is the foundation of like, what I represent and like, why I continue, like, to do what I do.
Okay. So let me ask you this, man. You said you had, you were the middle child of five?
Yeah, five, man, five.
So how are your siblings doing as of today? You know, have you guys been able to maintain a relationship, and have you tried to steer them towards getting some help for therapy as well? Or do you have a relationship? Were you able to have a relationship?
Well, that's a great question. We do have a relationship, and it is far greater than it has ever been. So one of our sisters, she didn't actually grow up with us. So her father at the time took her from our mother, and she was raised with her father, where our family is originally from, which is Arkansas.
Okay.
So she didn't have to necessarily deal with that. But I also think that impacted how we relate, because we didn't grow up with her. So only four of us was together up until about 92, 93.
Okay.
So you fast forward now, do we have a relationship? Yes, it's a working relationship. And the reason why it's a working relationship between us, because she didn't experience what we experienced. And so I don't think she really understood what it meant for us to have gone through that. Mm-hmm. And so I think that created some sort of a dynamic, but God has been really graceful, because we're having a very budding relationship with her, because, and I think people over the years, we have become a little bit more vulnerable.
Yeah.
But all of my,
it happens as you get older,
man.
Too, man. A lot of that stuff you just say,
yeah,
man, you ain't got time for it, man. You know, you start hitting late 30s, early 40s, stuff like that. You're like, I'm not dragging I'm not dragging this shit with me anymore. You know, it's time to let some of that go.
And then, like, definitely, like, I'm proud of my sisters. Fresh, look, all of my sisters are married. They all have families, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they all have their own problems. I wouldn't say that I would call them and say, hey, I think you guys need to go to counseling. They all have their sort of help along the years, right? My older sister has a master in science. She's one step away from being a doctor. Like, she's doing some amazing things, right? And I remember her pushing a stroller at 15, not knowing where her next meal would come or wherever she stayed. But my sister went through the military and moved up in educational ranks, and then now she's living like an incredible life. Still have problems. She's still growing, still evolving. But what I love about that is that through the ashes, you know, grew up to be such a phenomenal person. And like, the list goes on. My younger sister, all of my sisters are doing great, because they all found something to hold on to. And I appreciate like the men that helped them get there as well. So yes, we have a relationship. Is it getting better? Yes. Does it have its problems? Yes. Because some of the things that were planted when we were children, it would divide us in our adult years.
Right.
So for instance,
it's hard to overcome because it's part of your environment, and that is, it is so hard. If it's two things that is hard to outrun, man, and this is a freshism, a fresh philosophy, if you will. But if it's two things that, mm-hmm. that I think are just so difficult to overcome, that's number one, you can't outrun your DNA. It's like, you know, if you're destined to have a certain disease or something like that because of your DNA, because of, you know, your family, sure, you're going to get it. Number two, the environment that you're raised in.
Yeah,
it is, man. I know some people that are what you would consider well to do. I mean, making very, 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 very good salaries that are just not adjusted to society just based on how they were raised. The thought processes, mm-hmm. and the things that they do, it makes you wonder, how did you become successful when you still have these things in your mind and in your heart, and you still harp on certain things and you still hold on to stuff? It's really hard to outrun your environment. And you know, when there's death in the family, or when there is trauma within the family, or, you know, emergency circumstances, those things actually rear themselves up, and you start to see exactly how broken people really are. It's a weird family dynamic sometimes, but
no, that's so true.
We appreciate you sharing, you know, that portion of it, man. So let's move on a little bit and talk about some of the music, man. How would you describe the Christopher Lamarck brand when it comes to music?
Three of my favorite words: pain, transition, and triumph.
Okay.
The pain portion is, look, I'm not going to lie about it happening. I'm not going to run from it. So I embrace the pain, right?
Okay.
Only so I can transition to my triumphant stage. And I feel like I am finally living in that triumphant season, being able to be an overcomer, to know that I didn't only survive, but I'm thriving. And just been a voice for those who may still feel rejected, displaced, right? Ostracized, et cetera.
Right,
so my
right.
music is about, man, accepting what you have gone through, but grow, elevate. And those three words, man, are really powerful, because you have to recognize the pain in order to transition to a better life.
Right.
So pain, transition, triumph.
Okay. So I could be wrong, but I doubt it, podcast, man. We're hip hop heads, man. Both Reg and I are.
All day.
We're like, I'm almost 50. Reg is in his mid 40s. So, you know, we grew up on. I grew up on more classic hip hop. You know, started off in the first hip hop song that I actually really loved, love, was Planet Rock. That was the first song that I actually really loved. That I was like, man, that really. Really got to me. First song I ever heard, I think,
man,
was
you digging a crate.
the first actual rap song that I actually heard, it wasn't Rapper's Delight. It was actually another Sugar Hill artist song. It was Grandmaster Flash and Furious Five. It was called Freedom. That was the first hip hop song that we don't care if your age is 10 or if you're that song. That was the first hip hop song that I ever heard.
Crazy.
And so, but Planet, when I heard Planet Rock, which was actually, a few years later, like maybe 3 or 4 years later in the landscape of hip hop, man, that stuff blew my mind. And I was hooked, ever since. But yeah, we're real big hip hop heads on the show. So since this isn't a visual podcast, I want you to describe to the people, because we're playing some music, as an underbed that is, that's your music. But they may not be able to hear it, in its entirety, since we're speaking
over.
But how would you describe your hip hop? If you had to say it sounds like this, it feels like this, it's made like this, Paint a picture.
Oh man, so storytelling. I feel like I am one of the best to ever do it from a storytelling standpoint. So if you can combine poetry, jazz, soul, and like gospel, if you put that all in one bowl, I think that's the best way to describe my music. It's soulful because it's full of heart, the gospel because of my faith. The jazz, because I'm inspired by, if you can think about anybody from Miles Davis, anybody from that whole era, that beautiful, melodic, laid back feeling that comes from jazz, right?
And John Coltrane and all those.
There's so many names to go through, but just that era, which was the birth of so many other genres, if you don't think about rhythm and blues, et cetera, right?
Right.
And then the poetry, just being able to tell the story and to keep pace of the story. And you and I talked about earlier, about Moth, Matters of the Heart.
That's my joint.
The beautiful thing about Man, the beautiful thing about that record, I knew that I was becoming more free, like when I was able to write that record.
Right.
Because I couldn't have written that record 10, 20 years ago. It's no way. It's no way I could have sat down and really understood where I was going. Because I think everything is about growth. And that's also a word that I can attach to my sound, because it's all about growth. How can we get to the next level? So, yeah, man, that's the best way I can describe like what it is I do. But it's nothing like seeing me live, because what I do, I combine all those different genres on stage through a live band. You're talking about horns. Man, like the bass, like the guitar, like the background singers, and we just put on a show. It is called the Christopher Lamarck Experience, and it's nothing like it fresh, man.
Man, I believe you, man, because I've listened to the music, man, and like I said, Matters of the Heart is a personal favorite, because you know I produce hip hop music as well, and
oh, that's dope.
I think I kind of look at things from a different perspective. I listen to the words, obviously, but I dissect the track too. And the way that track just rides, man. It's like, and it's you know, whoever put that, did you produce that too, or was that produced by?
No. That's it's such a powerful record, man. That's from my homeboy Spree Israel. He's a producer here in Chicago. Such a phenomenal dude, and I remember the day he actually gave me that record, and I had rushed upstairs, and I was in a hotel, and I just couldn't stop, and that record just happened all in one night, man.
I'm telling you,
that's like phenomenal production.
Hey, it is definitely, shout out to it. It's Spree Israel, correct?
Spree Israel, okay. Yeah, Spree, like Spree Israel.
Okay. Well, shout out to Spree, man. He definitely did his thing on that. Let me ask you this, man, because I know that somebody has probably told you this before, but your delivery sounds a little bit like Jigga, man. How many times have you heard that?
I heard 100, that
110, 115.
I heard
if
that.
If you had
so
a dollar
much.
For every time.
Oh man, I'll be rich.
Right.
I'll be rich. Now, look, for a long time, I used to hate it, like really hate it, because I used to feel like people were telling me that I was trying so hard to sound
like
them.
Yeah.
And so
I can
would
tell it's
bothered.
Natural, though, man, because I can listen to you. I can listen to you and tell how your pitch would naturally come out sounding like that, because your pitch is in your speaking voice. Is in that particular range, you know, right now. It's just that, you know, when you start that inflection, I can see how it would go naturally, you know, to that particular sound. I mean, it sounds natural. It sounds like you, but it just happens.
Man.
This happens to be similar, you know.
Hey, look, I'll tell you like this, and I appreciate that. I got to share this story with you, Fresh. One of my first producers, like one of the guys that first believed in me. TJ, you know, if he's listening out there in radio world or wherever, I love this guy like to life, but one of the things that I hated in this moment, because you know I'm happy, I love going to the studio, and I used to go on, you know, an unlimited amount of time, because he had this fresh studio like in this place. And one time I was recording this song, and he was so disgusted that I sound like Jay. He said, look, the studio is shut down. You cannot come back in here no more until you come with your original voice. And I was like, what?
Your original voice.
man. So I'm on the mic now because I want to stay in the studio. And so I'm changing my voice. I'm like, yeah, God is whatever, love. You know, trying so hard like to change my voice. And I say, you know what? I'm just going to embrace the fact that this is my voice. But I also say this. I embraced it so much. 2016, I was talking to my guy, one of my engineers, went in the studio downtown Chicago playing pool. And I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to do a Jay-Z tribute. And he said, what? That would be crazy.
That would be crazy.
And so I said, why not? Everybody think I sound like him anyway, and it'd be nothing for me to do it.
Right.
One show led to 9 shows that we did in 1 year's time. It was so phenomenal. We looked up, and Jazzo was standing in front of the stage watching us perform. Jazzo.
Wow.
you feel me? Like the guy that gave Jay-Z
a shot.
I mean, dude, like it was crazy. It had got that big. We in tuxedos, full band. I'm talking about, I learned the songs from A to Z.
Right.
20 years of his music on stage. But that was me owning it. That was me not being like uncomfortable anymore. It was like, if anything else, it forced people to listen to me. Because once they heard my cadence and they heard my story, they started to embrace Christopher Lamar, not just how I sound.
Right.
So,
yeah, because I don't think your rhyme style is like Jay at all. It's just the tone and the pitch. You just happen to have a similar voice, but the rhyme style is like it's really nothing like that. So I mean you're definitely in your own lane when it comes to putting your stuff together. But like I said, you just happen to be blessed with a voice that is, you know, similar to one of the greatest rappers of all time. That's a high class headache to have, bro.
Right. I mean, so it's like, they could say I sound like the worst rapper of all time, right?
Right.
Look, man, it's the good and the bad. It's all about owning your authenticity, being who you are. And like, if you sound like somebody, it's somebody that we all sound like. It's somebody that we all favor in looks. But the one thing that you have to do is to make sure you're walking around being yourself,
exactly.
Right? And so that's most important. And that's my whole thing with Coffee Hip Hop and mental health, the Christopher Lamar experience, man. Own your authenticity. Because just think about this, Fresh. If you're walking around every day trying to create something other than the Fresh Originals or anything else you produce, right?
Right.
You wouldn't attract the right people to you, because how can you attract the right people, the right opportunities, if you're walking around pretending to be somebody else?
Exactly.
It's impossible.
It's absolutely impossible. Right.
You know? And so I feel like I attracted you, and I attracted all the other good, bad, or indifferent things because I was walking around being me. Anytime I was doing anything but that, I was attracting all type of chaos.
Right. Because I'll be straight up with you, man. When I saw the first thing, I think I may have seen, I don't know if you were running ads or not. I'm not quite sure how I came across the Coffee Hip Hop and Mental Health movement, but it was on my timeline, and I saw the hat. It was a camo hat, and I was like, "Yo, this is dope." And it was like Coffee Hip Hop and Mental Health. I was like, "Man, I was digging the concept just right off of just reading the words." You know, I had absolutely, you and I hadn't actually even spoken at that particular point. And I was just like, man, I don't know what this is, but it fits. And, you know, being a person of a certain age, I'm like, yeah, this is smart. This is a smart movement. Let me check it out. And then so, man, I delved into, you know, everything that you were doing and everything. I was like, yeah, I got to support this. I got to support this right here, man. So that's when I hit you up. I was like, man, you know, how can I get the hat? So on and so forth. You know, we just been chopping it up ever since. But yeah, man.
Man, for sure. Look, I mean, I'm going to interject, but Fresh, I got to say this. The one thing I didn't know, and like, excuse me if I just didn't get it, but the fact that you do production, I miss that. So like, I mean this because I'm in writing mode, like for my new album right now.
Okay.
So I'm saying you got to send me some samples, and I'm not saying that from a political standpoint. I'm saying like, I'm accepting music right now so we can do something. So I just want to make sure I say that. I mean, because it's too much in the moment for me to forget that.
Okay.
So I need that.
Okay. I got you, brother. I always got some stuff cooked up for you, man.
Man, nice. That's good to know. Look, man, I appreciate the fact that you did dive in and you did like support the movie right away. You don't find like too many people that literally see a post, like a post, and say, "How can I support?" Like, you literally did that all in the span of 2 minutes,
right? Exactly.
And it was like, that's a beautiful thing. And so I was happy that we was able to ship it to you and like, you know, get it to you. I'm just waiting for a picture to see like you sporting it.
Yeah,
and,
I told you I got to get my beard right, man. I got to make sure that the beard is tight. Like, so I can, you know,
man, it's been 2 weeks, bro.
But I'm just saying,
it's
man.
It's been 2 weeks with this beard, bro.
You get my age, man. Stuff, everything takes longer, bro. Everything takes longer, man. So, but yeah, I got you, though, bro. I'm gonna put some stuff out there, man. I'm gonna have a have a nice shirt to match and everything too, man. I got you, brother.
Nice.
I got you. Trust me.
Nice, brother.
So, is there anything else, man, that you want to talk about today, man? Because I got one last question, but I want you to, you know, if there's anything about the movement that that we haven't talked about that we should know, I definitely want you to go ahead and put that out there for the people.
Sure. Like, first and foremost, if anybody's listening, you can follow me at Coffee Hip Hop and Mental Health. Coffee Hip Hop A-N-D Mental Health. And also at Christopher Lamarck. This is all on Instagram. Christopher Lamarck is L-E-M-A-R-K. And one of the things I want people to get from the entire movement fresh, more than anything, I love our women, our children, but I love our black men, because I want them to go to counseling, seek mentorship. I want them to go back to school. And trust me, everything I'm asking from them, or I'm trying to encourage, I am going to do it. I am either in the process of doing it or already doing it. I already see a therapist every week. I am already trying to go back to school, because I feel like education is everything. And even if you don't go from a systematic standpoint, be around people that's smarter than you, that know better, more than you. Be around whole individuals. But
right.
The whole movement with Coffee Hip Hop and Mental Health is about self elevation, growth. Because look, everything that we do is birthed in our mind. So fresh, man, if our minds are not in order, that's why we're killing each other. I'm not even talking about what they're doing. We know what's happening from the system standpoint.
Right,
but I'm talking about in our community and
in
our neighborhood.
We got to give ourselves a chance.
Man, we have to. Yes, we have to take care of ourselves. So more than anything, I am pushing everybody in our community to go to therapy. But I really want our men to sit down to unpack. It is okay not to be okay. It's okay not to be well. It's okay to tell somebody that you're hurting. It's okay to tell people you're starving, literally. It's okay to tell people you don't have no money, you're broke, but you're trying. But you just got to tell people you're hurting. Walk around and pry and, like, holding that stuff in. Like you said before, we are mental and emotional time bombs. You are right. That's why people are killing each other. It's something that Nipsey Hussle said about the gangbanging culture that makes so much sense, and God rest his soul. You know, we lost Jim when we lost Nipsey, but I love the fact that we have his sound bites. And what Nipsey said, man, he said, when you think about the gang culture, when are you off on a mission and you rolling around the neighborhood, if you see somebody square, you'll drive past them. But the moment you see somebody that look just like you, that walk like you, that dress like you, you step out and you start to shoot. Because he said, like, the twisted thing about the gang culture is that when you go on your mission, you're technically looking for you. You're looking for someone that looks just like you, like, to kill and destroy.
Right. Yeah.
I thought that was heavy, because we have become self-hunters of ourselves.
Right.
And I believe if we go and talk to somebody and we find support groups, that we start being vulnerable and we start to unpack, I feel like then we can start to free ourselves up. And if we're free fresh, we can grow in other spaces like education, finance, you know, entrepreneurship. But we won't be able to grow in advance so we can build our own communities until we clean our minds and our hearts up. So that's what I want to leave the people with, man.
That's what's up, man, because a lot of people don't realize freedom is, you know, even though we all have it on paper, it ain't really free, man.
Yeah.
You know, there's some chains that we have to break, you know, within our community. There's some psychological chains that need to be broken, and there's some environmental changes that need to take place. So, you know, you're definitely spot on with that, man. So why don't you tell the people, man, where they can find you and you know, for some upcoming dates. Do you have any upcoming dates that, you know, you'll be around the city doing some things? Not necessarily concerts, but just, you know, on the mental health thing as well. You know, any involvement in any kind of seminars, community projects, anything like that.
Yeah, man, the cool thing about, first I'll say this, thanks to the platform, Fresh. I mean, I really do believe that every opportunity is a grand opportunity, like, to display, like, what we do. So I want to say thank you first and foremost.
No problem.
But here in Chicago, we're putting together another event that is Coffee Hip Hop and Mental Health. And just so the people can understand what that is, like, the first hour is a holistic hour. And what we do is we allow like the DJ like to play a tribute to some of the artists that, you know, that help our culture from the hip hop standpoint. But we also are giving away complimentary like chair massages because we want people to come in,
that's dope,
you know,
brother,
with weights
dope.
Like to feel good,
right? That's dope.
And man. So that's what happens on the holistic hour. But the mid portion is the interactive, moderated panel discussion. And that's really cool. So on that panel, like, you have my perspective as an artist and person who goes to therapy. And then you have licensed therapists and educators on the panel so we can have this conversation with the community as a whole. And it's interactive because we give the audience a chance to ask us questions and we just dive into a beautiful conversation about the importance of mental health and clinical therapy. But at the end, myself and some of my artist friends, we put on a dope live performance with the band.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not just a typical conversation, it's a full-on event. And so the next one that we're having on September 28th, which is a Saturday, we're having a beautiful event and we're going to make it into a brunch. And it's going to be great, man, because food, good music, and great conversation and your people, that makes for interesting, but most of all, beautiful opportunity for us to love on each other. And at the end of that, we have therapists in a room. So if people want to schedule therapy appointments or if people want to take that information home, we always provide immediate resources. You can find that information on, you can find that information at coffee. HipHopAndMentalHealth.com, or you can follow us on Instagram at Coffee Hip Hop and Mental Health or at Christopher Lamar. But as far as the music, you can go onto Apple, all of the major online platforms, and put in Christopher Lamar and find that. If you want to find exclusive music, then you should go to CoffeeHipHopAndMentalHealth.com and find some of that unreleased music that is not on the major platforms.
Okay, that's what's up. And we'll be posting all that information. We put our post up, regarding the interviews and things like that. We're definitely going to take care of it. I got one last question, man. We normally do this for just about every guest that we have on the show, primarily because we are hip hop aficionados, if you will. I need your top five MCs.
Yeah.
Need your top five MCs.
Oh, man.
Because we do the top tens, when you get a chance to go back and listen to some of our episodes, we have a whole bunch of top tens out there, because we do it to highlight the culture and accomplishments, of black people.
Definitely.
Or whatnot. So we have a top 10 MC show out there. You can go check that out. But I need your top five. I need your top five MCs, 5 to 1.
Top five. Nas, number one. Jay, number two. Three, like Talib Kweli. Four, Mos Def. Five, Biggie.
Okay. All right. It's pretty interesting. Pretty interesting. I'll let you listen to our show and you can kind of compare because, we have a pretty big argument over who's number one and who's number 10, so on and so forth. It's a really interesting show that continues to be one of our most popular shows, man. So if you get the opportunity, definitely check that out. So right now
I gotta listen to it now, man.
And hey, we actually got one coming out, man. That's gonna it's a kind of a sneak preview. It's already done. I'm just editing it right now. We got top 10 hip hop producers coming out too. So that
fresh yo. Look, it's so hard like to give a top five, top 10, but my list is based on catalog and just rhyming ability. I think Talib Kweli, whether you want to talk about top 10, 5, or 50,
right,
Talib Kweli does not get the type of love he should get. If you listen to like the Black Star album, the Reflection Eternal album, bro.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Oh my God, bro.
I had Black Thought as number one on my list.
It's such an unfair, right, question because it's so many dope artists. We should do like top, like per decade. That's probably the fairest way to do it.
But this is the thing, because it's like your work is your work, though. It doesn't matter
that's
how you
true.
Do it. That's why.
That's true.
That's why when you play Thriller 40 years later, almost, that's why it still bangs. You understand what I'm saying?
It's still sick.
That kind of eliminates that era thing. You know what I'm saying?
actually, Off the Wall is better than Thriller, but
I agree with you on that. I agree with you.
That's the best album.
Right, but I'm just saying, as far as that's what people recognize more. You know what I'm saying? That's what...
Definitely, man. So, most commercialized. Yeah.
Exactly. But again, that's why you can put it on and it still bangs today, because it's classic. So that's how I look at hip hop. It's like, can you put it on right now and it still go off? That's my whole thing. So, but
it's still a hit, bro.
Exactly. So Christopher Lamarck, man, we definitely appreciate you being on the show today, man. We wanna ride out to one of your songs, man. It's gonna be the one that I'm absolutely crazy about, man. I'm gonna go ahead and let you introduce it while we go ahead and ride on out there.
Man, yo, like, to everybody listening, this is Matters of the Heart, like, produced by Spree Israel, from Chicago's own myself, Christopher Lamarck. Peace and love, people.
My heart suffered, I used to really stutter. I used to have nightmares in the black covers. 82 was the year, disconnect the mother. I got four sisters, and I'm the only brother. The middle child, I'm in that basement. Or the back porch, can you see what I was faced with? Dear uncle, I really love you. And I forgive you for calling me a faggot. My auntie, she hated me. She did everything to harass me. I had the pain of a kid so drastic. What happened? I forgave you for calling me a bastard. I got an attitude, so I zoned out. And it was summer camp, I'm looking forward to. My childhood bittersweet, I'm feeling blue. In grammar school, man, I was teased by my teachers too. Listen to the matters of the heart. Listen to the matters of the heart. Listen to the matters of the heart. This is me and him, that beautiful God. Listen to the matters of the heart. Listen to the matters of the heart. Listen to the matters of the heart. This is me and him, that beautiful God. Now I remember what that pain used to feel like. Fighting in my bedroom, trying to get my mind right. I'm far gone, like, remember what was last night. 94 was the year, group on fire bright. I lost two friends, it was eight of us. Now it's only six, and I don't give a what. I'm trying to raise ours, I need dividends. I got a different heart, I need you again. I mean, dear Lord, I'm trying to feel love. I'm trying to kick it with my feet like forever, cuz now I'm 16, and then I'm 18. January 31st, 97 bat swings. Man, I've been arrested, blood was everywhere. Now he was 19, but I didn't care. And I was sitting everyone who ever touched here. And he was trying to hurt me, so I got him back. I'm in that backseat crying, what was all of that? I'm headed to the jailhouse, man, can you imagine that? Listen to the matters of the heart. Listen to the matters of the heart. Listen to the matters of the heart. This is me and him, that beautiful God. Listen to the matters of the heart. Listen to the matters of the heart. Listen to the matters of the heart. This is me and him, that beautiful God. And it was late 97 when I met God. And it started with a female, good job. She was light-skinned, her name Adrian. I tried to sleep with her, but she was taken. I mean, right with the Lord, she was chasing, praying for the rights of my soul to embrace it. Now September, it feels real familiar. So empowered by the force, put that word in ya. It's a notebook, I think 98. I put a pen to the pad like I'm on a date. I wrote poetry, and then quiet music. He introduced me to that beat, and now I'm rapping to it. And it was therapeutic, I'm getting defluid. Now I bow to the force, man, I've been renewing. And it's a phone call in 2009. And I forgave my fam for the past times. And now Christmas, before the new year, I see my mommy face, and now I'm seeing clear. Listen to the matters of the heart. Listen to the matters of the heart. Listen to the matters of the heart. This is me and him, that beautiful God. Listen to the matters of the heart. Listen to the matters of the heart. Listen to the matters of the heart. This is me and him, that beautiful God.
I could be wrong. wrong, but I doubt it. So don't enter this debate if you ain't bout it. Reflection and introspect, make sure that you come correct, then you should probably hurry, it gets crowded. Bring a friend with you. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. Don't enter this debate if you ain't bout it. Reflection and introspect, make sure that you come correct, then you should hurry up, it might get crowded. Bring a friend with you. Expression reds, their curators are cool. The culture and consciousness brought directly to you. Tune in every week for the newest of new and occasional politics as it pertains to you. Divergent point of views make for a whole picture, and we suggest you get your money up and take the shit with you. Ain't no fountain to you, but it's a secret elixir to ensure the black man as a permanent fixture. Standing here in America behind enemy lines, where more often than not my skin's considered a crime. Cops kill us daily and will never do time, while a crooked ass judge decides to fate for mine. One day at a time is what my mama would say, and since mama said living ain't no time to play, and since I got a little game, I'ma give it away. But let's start the show before I get carried away. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. So don't enter this debate if you ain't bout it. Reflection and introspect, make sure that you come correct, then you should probably hurry, it gets crowded. Bring a friend with you. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. Don't enter this debate if you ain't bout it. Reflection and introspect, make sure that you come correct, then you should hurry up, it might get crowded. Bring a friend with you.
You just tuned in to I Could Be Wrong, But I Doubt It, hosted by Fresh and Reg. Holla back next.